For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jeremy White.
I think everybody knows someone that does this, or
I think I know what you're about to say. And
wears shorts every single day, no matter what.
Yes.
And Joe DiBiase.
Everybody knows someone that does this. They wear shorts 365.
Hypothermia? We're like hypospermia.
Listen, if none of my friends are going to do it, I'm going to be the guy that wears shorts all the time.
I don't fear the cold. The cold fears me.
All situations, except like weddings. You know, at that point, lean into it.
You just got a pair of shorts.
You get to the wedding, the bride. What's going on with your buddy there? Oh, he's a shorts every day guy.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
And good morning. Happy Thursday, Jeremy and Joe. I saw, Joe, speaking of shorts, I saw one of those weather maps where they show the entire country is going to be warm for the next week.
Yep.
So we're in the 50s today and pretty much through, I don't know, maybe like the Chiefs game. It looks nice.
Josh, you put the shorts away for the summer, didn't you?
I did drag out a couple pairs just in case.
It was probably a good move.
Very happy that I did that. I'm not wearing them today, though.
I think so. I saw there's going to be days in the 60s next week. So
yeah.
All right. You might need them.
Yeah, that's nice. The Chiefs game. All right, ready? Let's pick that. We're doing everything we can to look past this Colts game, which is probably a mistake.
But yeah.
We'll spend plenty of time on it, I'm sure. Pick your ideal forecast for the Kansas City game.
My ideal forecast for the Kansas City game. No, I want it to be perfect. Right? 57 and sunny. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. The thought entered my brain. Do I just make this as ugly a game as possible? But I don't know why I would.
You could also just have like the decoration rain, if I could use that as a term.
Decoration rain.
Yeah, like the Chiefs on Monday night played against the Bucks, and they had rain, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't much of a difference. It just kind of made the game look cooler.
Yeah. What about snow?
Nobody wants to talk about snow.
Is there any reason why I would want that yet?
No.
Just for the game. Not the other day. It's just the game day.
Not yet. Here's one thing that could happen in this game that, you know, I found something out about overtime that I did not know. So at ProFootballTalk.com today, Mike Florio has a piece up about Todd Bowles explaining the decision to go for one in their game against the Chiefs on Monday.
Uh-huh.
So if you missed the game or you you don't know what happened in that game, it was exactly like the Bills and Dolphins game where the road team scores late and kicks an extra point to tie, which would go to overtime. The Bills, of course, got a field goal right before the end of regulation, and the Chiefs, they did not, and the game went to overtime. There was not that much time left. Like, I don't know, 20 seconds, 19 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't as much time for the Chiefs to work as the Bills had. So that was one of four games. You said there were four games this week where teams could have gone for two and didn't.
Yeah.
And they ultimately go to overtime, or every one of those teams lost.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm meandering here. It's early. What I'm getting at is, if Bills-Chiefs goes to overtime and the coin toss determines the winner, could we see the NFL make a move on regulation? And I feel like there should be a little bit of a push for this. The only problem is it's the Bucks, and let me explain why. So in Todd Bowles' piece, or in Mike Florio's piece about Todd Bowles, he says that Bowles gave minor consideration, very minor, to go for two. Wet conditions played a role. And then there's a quote here from Baker Mayfield about it. And Baker says, I did not lobby for it to go for two. Hindsight is 20/20. We had a little momentum on the long drive. They were gassed a little bit. But, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You're hoping to win the coin toss. I'm not a fan of the overtime rules. Obviously, it's gotten us twice now. So, yeah, overtime rule's not the best. And I thought, wait, the Bucs have two of those?
Yeah.
And sure enough, they lost a game to Atlanta in overtime where they lost the toss.
Oh.
And the first possession was down, touchdown, game over. The Bucs are 4-5 with two losses coming only because they lost a coin toss in overtime and could not make
and,
a stop.
And one would have been in their own division to the team that's ahead of them right now.
And that team, you know, if you want to be a, well, just make a stop on defense, guess who doesn't make stops on defense? Atlanta doesn't either. So
right.
The Bucks are under 500, 4-5, a game and a half out of their division lead. And the reality is, if they had flipped two coin tosses, they might be 6-3 and ahead of their division, ahead of Atlanta. I don't know that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to get, in Baker Mayfield losing coin tosses in overtime, are ever going to get the NFL to move it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the NFL solution is for the regular season, because I get the sense they don't want their games going long. They don't want the format to be like the college format. But, man, I did not know that the Bucs have had that happen to them twice this year.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Is the thing – you do you have something that you think would change it in the regular season? Because I just had a thought that they would have changed it the instant that it happened, that the season ended. If it's the Chiefs' only loss.
Ah, yes.
Right? If they have, even if it's not like right at the end, although if it's right at the end, that'll make it, I think, this more obvious. But if they lose to the Bills in 2 weeks and they lose in overtime because they lost the coin toss and the Bills score a touchdown on their opening drive, and that's their only loss of the season, then it's going to be labeled as, oh, well, the coin toss kept the Chiefs from having a perfect season, so let's change it.
That's a great point. That's a great
100%. They would move it in an instant, I think, if that happened. Maybe you could just say if the Chiefs had happened to the Chiefs at all, or if it happened to the Bills again, because it happened to the Bills in the playoffs and they changed it in the playoffs.
They changed it in the playoffs in two different ways over time. And this is where, you know, the hey, just make a stop on defense crowd, I feel like they had more legs to stand on until the NFL changed it in the playoffs.
Right.
Because the NFL basically has said, yeah, the format's not good enough. We've got to make it more equitable when the games matter the most. And one other thing about football, of course, here is that we know these games matter a lot in the regular season. Maybe not for the Bills in this division. But for the NFL to have already made the change twice in the playoffs and gone further each time would be an admission that, yeah, just make a stop on defense, that doesn't hold any water. We don't think that that's good enough for us when the games matter. So I just wonder, like you laid it out perfectly, what game in the regular season could convince them that it matters in the regular season? And I feel like that's why I'm looking ahead to Chiefs-Bills.
Right,
and
yeah.
You've laid out the perfect scenario for how they get it.
One loss.
Other way around, you know, the Chiefs win the coin toss in Buffalo and win it in overtime. Even that, I've got like my game of the year, and I'm on the Chiefs are on the road. I don't care if it's a shootout or if it's 3-3. The point is, how are you gonna end that game like that?
Well, how much, looking back on the 13 seconds game that got that rule changed, how much of that wasn't just, hey, it was Bills Chiefs.
Yep.
It was how the game ended. Right? Like it was.
Nobody made stops.
Yeah. If that had looked like any of the other Chiefs Bills games since, which have been more, you know, low scoring ish, 24-20. How many? Has that score happened four times between these two opponents? I know not literally, but it's felt like it. 24-20, and you get a couple of big plays, but for the most part, it's a football game. That game was a circus where everyone is scoring right at the end, back and forth, back and forth. It looks like no one's ever going to stop. And then the coin flip, you know, stops it. So I wonder, you know, retroactively, would that have been different? Would they have been slower to change it if the game script had been different? Would it be different next week if, you know, the Chiefs lose on a coin toss in a 20-17 game versus they lose on a coin toss in a 42-36 game?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's look at last year's Bills-Chiefs playoff game. If that one goes to overtime, let's say, you know, and the old rules are in place. Bass makes the kick.
Yeah.
It's tied, and the Chiefs go 3-and-out and bleed clock. Now we're going to overtime. Because that game was not a shootout.
No.
But if that game ends the way the 13 seconds game ends, which is one team wins the toss and goes down and wins the game, you're asking, would that kind of game also have gotten the rule changed? And I think the answer is very possibly. Because every time this conversation comes up, and when it came up for Allen and Mahomes in the 13 seconds game, the reason the conversation was given life is because of the quarterback left on the sidelines. Originally, it was, how are we going to have the MVP of the league Peyton Manning not touch the ball in overtime? That doesn't make any sense. Like, right. Mahomes beating Allen was the final straw to make it where, no, even a touchdown isn't enough. You have to do more. So it's always been about the caliber of quarterback. You know, you say if it's Bills Chiefs and it's not a shootout, do they do it? I want to say they might. If it's, hold on, let me insult some quarterbacks here for a second as I just, if Ooh. It's who?
Yeah, who's not getting a chance
it's
to
Flacco,
tie the ball?
If it's Flacco and Minshew or Flacco and Russell Wilson in an overtime game, I don't think it really resonates the same in that moment. The other thing about 13 seconds is, you know, the rule existing as it did back then, it's kind of wild that the Bills' most heartbreaking game, what percentage of Bills fans think about the heartbreak of the 13 seconds and don't think about the fact that if they just won the coin toss, your greatest heartbreak of the last 20 years, 30 years, might not have existed.
Right.
I mean, they just win the toss. It's like we're still mad at McDermott, but they're on to the AFC Championship game because they score.
If they had changed it after the New England-Kansas City game a couple years before.
Right. Is that 2 years before when the Chiefs lose a coin toss and lose in overtime?
I think so, yeah. If they'd done it right then and there, you get another shot at it. And then we're what? Talking about whether you go for two or not or something.
Yep.
Strategy.
So what's the answer? You know, I've said it before. I said it on Tuesday after we watched that Monday Nighter. I just feel like the answer is to just eliminate the coin toss.
Yeah.
And because Todd Bowles, as he's talking about how they've lost two games in overtime and how they made the decision to go for one there in Kansas City at Arrowhead, if he knows Patrick Mahomes is going to get the ball, there is no coin toss, they're going to get the ball, then maybe he chooses differently. And, mm-hmm. you know, on and on like that. If you just have situations where you know, if I know they're going to get the ball, let's take it to last year's Bills-Chiefs playoff game. If the rule is, instead of a coin toss, that road teams get the ball in overtime because, like, you've earned that, does McDermott go for fourth and nine, or does he kick for Bass to miss? Because right. what he's trying to do is make the kick, and if we make a stop, well, then we're on to overtime, where currently the rules are equitable. But in the old format, if it's the road team gets the ball first,
and you're making a kick just to hand the ball to Mahomes at the start of overtime,
yeah, you would probably operate differently.
Yeah. Is there a way? Is there a video game that's like this where you could just extend the clock? Like, you just keep going. Whoever's got the ball, the game, nothing changes. We're not kicking the ball off. We're not doing a coin toss. If the game is tied at the end of regulation, just we're going plus clock, basically, until somebody scores. Does that make it worse?
That's terrible, yes.
That's a horrible idea?
Yes. You know why? Take it to Bills Dolphins this week.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe there Mike McDaniel decides to go for two, but if he doesn't, he kicks the ball. The Bills get the ball back with 2 minutes left, and you're telling me we just take the time off the clock. There's no urgency,
yep.
the strategy for timeouts, everything's gone.
Yeah.
Like, the end of the fourth quarter is so unbelievably changed.
Yeah, no, that's right. Because now that I'm thinking of it, I think it's a soccer video game that has that, which is a very different sport for this.
Yeah.
So you're not taking turns back and forth.
Right. Then the idea of 2 minute drills are, they're just gone in tie games.
Right. Right. If
and
you're
I
tied.
Don't want to get rid of that. I've got my most dramatic time.
Yep.
It's the red zone witching hour. And, you know, you're watching the red zone channels. Like, all right, well, three of these games are tied, so we got to take the time off the clock because now we're just going to, you know, it's a different
right.
format, but I don't think that would work too well. And that seems radical to me in terms of, like, what the NFL would accept.
I just want to get rid of the coin toss. I think your idea is good, though. Like, just find a way, though, to get rid of the coin
Road
toss.
Road team, home team, bake in the possession.
Yeah.
Because the coin toss is tough. But you know, the start of this conversation is, what would it take for them to change the regular season the way they did
mm-hmm.
the postseason, rather? And your answer is right. If the Chiefs lose their only game in overtime on a coin toss, we now have to root for this exact scenario for the greater good.
That would mean rooting for them to get the one seed then, I think, because
they're undefeated other than the Bills.
But
in this scenario, the Bills beat them at
right.
home. We have fun. We ruin their perfect season. I think this is a perfect scenario. I'm now rooting for this exact scenario. Bills win toss, win in overtime, beat Chiefs,
mm-hmm.
league changes rule.
Although you're going to be hearing consistently about, like, yeah, but they didn't get the ball back. Like, do you want to sign up for a lifetime of that game or that season just being remembered for the season that the Chiefs got jobbed of history?
I mean,
because if they lost one game that way, it would be remembered forever as, oh, they should have gone. They kind of got hosed, right? Like, we don't really feel that way about that Bills game only because of what they did at the end of regulation.
Right. To kind of earn that.
If Allen had thrown the touchdown to Gabe Davis with 0 seconds left on the clock instead of 13 seconds, and then they go to overtime and lose, I think we're not... All our anger that from that day on that was pointed at Sean McDermott and the coaching staff is all at the league, right? It's all at the rules. All of that anger, all that emotion, all that energy is redirected, I think, at overtime. But I think the overtime didn't get the scathing, you know, fury of Bills fans because everybody was staring at McDermott and the Bills coaching staff for the end of regulation. So, like, to me, that would be the Chiefs, though. It depends how maybe the end of the game goes, but if they kick a field goal to tie the game at the end, and then the Bills get the ball to start, and they get it, and that's their only loss, like, in, I don't know. I don't know that I want to sign up for a lifetime of, oh, remember the year the Chiefs should have gone undefeated? Just, I don't know if I want that.
I always think that, all right, they got screwed. Somebody got screwed. Who's the team, not your own, that you think that the most about?
They got screwed?
This is my point, really. No one remembers that you got screwed. Only you remember it. Mm-hmm. Who got screwed? This way. If I put 100 sports fans in a room and ask them each to write down how their own team got screwed, the biggest time they got screwed, you'd have 100 answers. Easy. Everybody have 5 on the list. And then I said, all right, I want you to think of some other team got screwed. You'd sit there for a minute and be like, all right, hold on a second.
Right.
Let me think. That's a good question. I don't have the answer. Who's the most obvious?
Yeah.
Like, I think back to the Seattle-Pittsburgh Super Bowl. There's generally a feeling that the Seahawks had a rough deal there because of the officiating. I'm sure Seattle, they could tell you the 17 plays that happened. To me, I'm just like, I feel like that went poorly for them.
Yeah, okay. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the Saints... Yes. Rams NFC, is it the NFC Championship?
Yes, that's a good one. That's one where the rule got changed.
The pass interference changed for a
it
year.
It was so bad, they changed the rule for a year.
Right, yeah.
And the Saints complained so much, they were going to strike, they were like introducing legislation to Congress.
Yeah.
They complained so much that the entire NFL said, shut up.
Right. You know,
like, get over it.
Right. It might just be too early in the morning to think of some of these. There's probably some good baseball ones or hockey ones, I'm sure, too, in other sports.
Who is the standard as got a raw deal the most that you can't answer your own team?
See, the tough part about hockey for that is maybe the answer is the Sabres.
Right, no goal is pretty rough.
Like, no goal might be the answer for someone if I ask this question in Minnesota, you know?
Yep.
But I'm sure there's other good hockey ones somewhere. Eastern Conference Finals somewhere along the way. Gretzky against the Leafs. Does this ring a bell?
No.
High-sticked a Leaf, and they didn't call him a penalty for it, or they did, and then they took it away, and then he immediately scored after and won the game. A Leaf fan could tell me about that one. I know I've heard that story before, though. Yeah. I don't know. That's the first thing that came to mind, a Gretzky story that I was not even alive for.
There's the famous fifth down in college football. That's one. There's Vinny Testaverde scoring a touchdown with his helmet to send the Jets to the playoffs in one, like 1998. I think that's a year where replay was not in the NFL, and then they again brought it back. There were a couple years there, replay was gone.
Yeah. How many of these, though, were just missed calls?
Oh, tons of them.
Almost all of them feel like they're just missed calls, right?
Yes.
Unless you would say, like, the opponent cheating. Is like someone, I mean,
Patriots stuff.
The Yankees were crying about this again, Brian Cashman, before this World Series, about how the Astros cheated them out of a World Series.
Yeah.
But like, I am not going to sit here and tell you the Yankees are going to be the answer that got the most screwed over, especially when they got caught cheating after two.
This would be one where you didn't get screwed by a call. You got screwed by the format of the overtime in week 10 was blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
I think it's probably got to be NFL because I don't know how many other sports really it ever feels like that, where like, oh, one team just didn't get a chance. You know, like you could even think it, like hockey is gimmicky, where there was one year the Flyers and the Rangers, I think, had a shootout to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And like that's gimmicky. Like for sure, that's so stupid. But each team had an equitable opportunity, even in the gimmick.
Yep.
This is different. Just football is just it's not equitable. That's the difference, I think.
803-0550, our phone number on this. If you want to pop in on, you know, remembering what team got the raw deal the most, I don't know. I mean, this overtime format tends to, I mean, we feel that way or should feel more that way about 13 seconds, but we don't, because there's the self-loathing part of it about what happened, like you said. Without that 13 seconds, if Gabe Davis catches that touchdown and then they just flip a coin, we are forever.
Yeah.
I'm irate about that. So 803-0550. Quentin Jefferson and Jordan Phillips are back with the Bills.
Yep.
I saw a tweet that really kind of summed this up for me and really got me thinking about one position that we never talk about this way for the Bills. Anthony Brosco of Cover at One. Anthony Cover One. We had him on the show. You know, he wrote basically like, how long, how many times do the Bills have to remake their defensive line before they just get exhausted with it? And if you think about the interior defensive tackle, the level of investment there, Joe, ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Ed Oliver, who's the next highest investment of defensive tackle in the entire McDermott era?
Star Latulale.
Yes.
And that was like when they showed up, though, wasn't it? Like right. That was a while ago.
So, okay, number one, Ed Oliver. Number two, 7 years ago, Star Latulale.
Right, they don't even really overlap much.
No.
Like, it's like they had one big investment contract-wise, and they had one big investment kind of after.
So where's the second biggest investment, and third biggest defense, interior defensive line in the McDermott era?
Ooh, is it? I mean, there isn't going to really be one, right? Like Daquan Jones, but that's not much,
right.
I don't think.
Right.
That's like a modest contract, basically. Like, it's almost replacement level money, I think.
I feel like, for me, defensive tackle has been a blind spot where I would say this all the time about guard, that they don't really address that. But they drafted guards in the second round multiple times. Dwayne Carter in the third round this year.
Yeah.
Before that, I mean, the Bills are going multiple years without a draft pick on the interior of the defensive line.
Without any draft pick.
Any draft pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Harrison Phillips, right?
Do you want to know how many Harrison Phillips, yes.
Third
how many
pick.
Draft picks between Ed Oliver and Dwayne Carter on the interior of the defensive line? The answer is zero.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
They're constantly kind of shuffling guys in and pulling in your Jordan Phillips and your Quentin Jefferson, your Austin Jackson.
Ely Onku, I feel like, has been in and out of this place like 19 times in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So take for that what you want, but if it might be a feature, not a bug. But, there's just not a lot that they've committed to that position.
I wonder if it's a feature. I wonder if it's a feature, and they think of how they are philosophically on defense. They want you to run it. They want you to run it. They want to stop the pass. They're going to invest in stopping the pass. So I wonder if in an honest moment they would tell you that of the whole roster, they think that, you know, defensive tackle, what we'll have, we want one good guy, and then it's the most replacement level position we have.
Yeah.
If we got to throw Ely Onku in there for a guy on a practice squad in for a couple of games, like, we'll be just fine.
I'm looking at the draft history since their first draft together, like Tre'Davious White, right? Tre'Davious White goes in 2017. I think they have drafted a total of three defensive tackles.
Yeah.
And that's Harrison Phillips, Ed Oliver, and Dwayne Carter.
Yeah. I mean, think Onku, just using him as an example here, because he's in and out, practice squad a lot. He plays this past week against Miami 35% of the snaps. How many other positions? Actually, that was against. Wait, hold on. Sorry, that was a different game. Last week against Miami, Ely Onku. No, it was 35%. How many other positions do you think the Bills would be comfortable playing a practice squad guy 35% of their snaps?
Yeah,
not many.
No.
Interesting.
803-0550. 1-888-550-2550. Bengals and Ravens tonight for Thursday Night Football. Sabres and Rangers as well. We'll take your calls if you want. You can join us at 803-0550. Sal coming up today. We got to get the news on Keon Coleman. We know the news on Coleman and his injury, which could keep him out for a little bit of time. Scott Pianowski as well. Three-way parlay. Lots to get to. Lots of fun to be had. So join us if you'd like on the defensive tackle conversation, on the overtime conversation. I've got good trivia for you as well. It's all coming up. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we'll see where things go, and Nate communicates with me each day and just take it one day at a time. And it could be more than just this week, but we'll see. Evaluation is still ongoing here.
Keon Coleman there. Sean McDermott on Keon Coleman. Could miss multiple weeks with this injury. Evaluation ongoing. Sean McDermott talking about the trainers and how it could go. So we'll see. Hopefully Amari Cooper is back. You know, as we talked last segment, Joe, a little bit about the upcoming Chief game. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe on WGR. Happy Thursday. I'm broadcasting from home today. Don't have my day of the week clock, and pulling out what day it was successfully. Uh-huh. I want a point for that.
Yeah, you did drag it out a little bit. I feel like you weren't 100. You were maybe like 80% sure when you pulled Thursday out there.
If you could have seen me, my head whipped around a couple times looking for that day of the week clock.
Like that, anyway. Was there a little squint maybe? Like
a little bit. Thursday.
Yeah, there was no inflection in the voice, though, so you got away with that.
So,
no
Bills
Coleman.
And Chiefs, very possibly no Coleman in this game.
And that would be important in that just he's played. If you take out the Jacksonville game, which he was suspended for in the first quarter, he has played at least 60% of snaps in every single game this season for the Bills. And he's typically actually been more around, like last 3 weeks, it's been 79%, 83%, 75%. Like, he's playing more than any other receiver on the field.
He's a really big part of their offense.
Yeah. And we talked about with Joe Marino, like, his blocking stuff. And when I think of kind of his full role with the offense, Samuel, like, Cooper, I think, is where you'd want those targets to go. I would bet the snaps go to Matt Collins, though.
Yeah, would you think that here's the question, I guess, which kind of takes us back in time. Cooper, Shakir, Kincaid, and Cook as your primary weapons, if Coleman is unable to go, we'll get a preview of this week, right? Because we think Cooper should be okay. I mean, he's still limited at practice, but we're hoping he's okay. If you have no Cooper and no Coleman against the Colts, you could probably still win that game. I don't know that you can beat the Chiefs without those two.
I was going to say, this would be the right matchup for that. You're going to be barren without those two, but the Colts are horrible in the secondary. Next week would be, I want to say they couldn't beat the Chiefs without both of them.
Me too.
One of the two. Maybe with one of the two. If they didn't have Coleman next week, but they had Cooper out there, and okay, Holland's got to play, but you've got Shakir, Kincaid, and Cooper, I think you could beat the Chiefs. But if you don't have either, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know how are you getting Shakir any space to operate? Because if I'm the Chiefs and I've got Matt Collins and who? Shavers on the outside, Samuel on the outside, I just ignore them. I don't even have to cover them. Just pay attention to the middle of the field, kind of like some of the other teams have done. So I think it's very different whether Cooper is on the field or not.
803-0550 to join us and 1-888-550-2550. Bills and Colts Sunday, Rangers and Sabres tonight, and also tonight Bengals and Ravens.
That's a great one. Such a good game.
I've gone pretty deep on who to root for.
Okay.
I think I have possibly, and this is something that I would roll my eyes at normally, but I'm going to go for it, if you will.
Okay.
Ready? Because I think you said root for Baltimore. Because are you someone that is a little afraid of the Bengals matchup for the Bills?
A little bit, yes. Okay. And in this game, the New York Times playoff machine, if the Bengals win, their playoff odds are 60%. If the Bengals lose, they are 33%. This is a massive game for them.
Okay, so that's fine. That's fine. You want the Bengals out of the picture. I would think that's fine. Speaking of that, listening yesterday, Joe Goodberry, who talks Bengals, covers the Bengals, is on the afternoon show. And, man, listen to him talk about Cincinnati and the organization that they have and the issues that are kind of popping up for them. It had me thinking of, if you want to talk about a lot about McDermott and all this, and, you know, I've been someone to half poo-poo culture ideas, because I think a lot of teams have good cultures and think they have good cultures. The entire conversation from Joe Goodberry about the Bengals was about a team with a really bad culture.
Yeah.
And everything that goes on there. The whole thing about Jermaine Burton, who was supposed to go in for T. Higgins this week, and he's been missing meetings, and he no-showed, and they find him, then he no-showed again, and Burrow on the sidelines, like, looking furious. He threw 5 touchdown passes in that game last week, and still, like, looked like he was mad about it.
He was flipping out on was that the game he was flipping out on the refs because they wouldn't let him snap the ball?
I don't know, maybe. But
he flipped out.
There's, you know, the Bengals don't guarantee money past year one in a deal. Mm-hmm. So, like, everything about what they were saying sounded like an organization where the players would really be looking around all the time saying, like, what kind of operation do we have here? I mean, they have Burrow and Chase to carry them to success. But past that, a lot of questions. Anyway.
Well, they haven't even committed to Chase. Like,
right, I know.
I mean, I think Chase will – I don't think Burrow will let Chase get away because I think Burrow – I mean, imagine if he's already – angry at certain things. He wanted Burton to play. Like before all the extra stuff. I mean, I'm sure, you know, if he saw or heard what was happening, you know, I think it was the day before the game, they were trying to call and text him and they just couldn't even get a hold of him. Then Burrow would understand. Burrow was talking like 4 days before that game about how he wants to get Jermaine Burton more targets and on the field more. And then he was inactive that game, but it was because of his own doing. So he's already maybe a little testy. Wasn't he really the guy that pulled the lever on getting Chase? Do you remember that, like, leading up to that draft, that it was okay, Penei Sewell, right? Roster wise it made sense for Penei Sewell, but it was Burrow wants Chase. Burrow played with him. They already have T. Higgins, doesn't matter. Burrow wants Chase. If they let Chase go in any circumstance, I mean, the quarterback's going to lose his mind, right? Like, all the stuff that Carson Palmer says about them. I think Carson Palmer has called them a mom-and-pop shop run on coupons. Like, I think Burrow would be like, okay, yeah, that's right, and I can't, what? I'm not going to say he's got to get out of here, but it gets ugly quick, I think, if they don't pay Chase, like, this offseason.
Yeah. So, digging deeper into who to root for tonight, you say Baltimore to eliminate Cincinnati. Okay. I might want to go so far down the who plays who. I think Kansas City, of course, is very likely to be the one seed. Even if the Bills beat them, you know, the Bills have to play near perfect down the stretch in order to stay in the one seed race. They have to beat the Chiefs. They have to come out of games against the Lions and the Rams and the Niners. It's going to be tough, but they could do it. That said, all right, the Chiefs are the one.
Yeah,
I think the Bills are in good position to be the two. And then it comes to where Baltimore finishes, or if you want finger quotes Baltimore. This is kind of be like dodging a bullet to a degree. What you really want, what you should want, I think, is Baltimore and Pittsburgh to finish any version of 4-5.
Have them play each other in the first round?
Have those two play each other, and then if it goes chalk, then Baltimore goes to Kansas City.
Right.
So,
okay.
Is it stupid for me to say I'm rooting for Cincinnati tonight? Because what I want is the AFC North winner to be the worst of the division winners from a record standpoint. I want the AFC North winner to be the 4 seed, and I also want that to be Baltimore.
Okay.
So I want Baltimore to hang back to stay below Houston, presumably win the South.
You want to drag down the North winner,
yes,
basically.
Is that... I would normally tell myself that is too getting in too deep right now with half a season to go, but to me that does scream root for Cincinnati because of that.
It's you know, it's deep, but I don't like, and I could be talked off of rooting for Baltimore tonight, and like this is pretty good because I think, again, like there's a lot of time to go, but if you kind of project it out, you think about the North right now, and I know they've got a lot, like, Baltimore still has to play Pittsburgh twice. This is their second meeting against Cincinnati, I think, though, right? Mm-hmm. So, they have got that. Like, Houston, meanwhile, who I would agree, like, to me that's a much, everything goes chalk, it's a preferable matchup in the second round. And even if it doesn't go chalk, you know, Baltimore, they don't have to win their division.
Right.
Like, if they lose tonight,
I have the numbers.
Since he's one game back of them.
And Pittsburgh's ahead of them, right?
Pittsburgh ahead of them.
So right now, if Baltimore were to lose tonight, they have a 37% chance to be a wild card team and a 13% chance to miss.
And then if they're a wild card team, like, just I don't think you have to even Well, I guess,
well, then
point,
they're dangerous.
Then you have to worry about playing them in round one.
That's what I mean. Like,
but
right,
I think
now,
they'd probably be the five.
If Baltimore loses tonight, they're 50-50 to win their division, basically.
Right.
Which is kind of nuts for a team that everyone looks at and thinks that offense is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, I do expect them to win tonight. I expect them to be just fine in this game. But,
well,
I don't
also
know.
In my rooting interest, how big a difference do we think it is between the Bengals and the other teams that are currently vying for playoff spots? Like, how big a difference? Because there's the history between Cincinnati and the Bills where they've played one game in one quarter and that did not go well at all. The Bills looked bad both times.
Don't forget a game last year.
They beat them last year too. Thank you. Right. I'm forgetting about that. That's a very forgetful game.
Very, very forgetful.
I don't even remember what happened in the game other than the Bills lost by 6, but it felt like they lost by 16. How big a difference is there between the Bengals and... See, to me, there is a difference. The teams that right now that are pushing for that 7 spot, I feel like the Chargers are going to get in. And I feel like there's going to be 2 AFC North teams. Who are the rest? Denver, Indy, Cincinnati, New York Jets. Like, to me, the Bengals are by far and away a bigger threat than the other 3 teams there.
Yeah, that might be just a Burrow fear, huh?
Pretty much. It's Burrow, Chase. Yep. If Chase and Higgins are healthy, Chase's numbers with and without Higgins, by the way, are like a crazy disparity. Yep. He's so much better when Higgins is out there. Yeah, I think the Bengals, that trio is so much more threatening than those other 3 teams.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Thursday night football on the way tonight. Bengals and Ravens, and Thursday night hockey, Sabres at Rangers. If the Sabres could pull one out, it would be quite big tonight because the weekend is a little softer on the schedule with Calgary and Montreal both in town. 803-0550, our phone number. You can give us a call, chime in if you'd like. 1-888-550-2550 on WGR. Time for some instant trivia, Joe. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right.
4-7.
Yeah. Thinking caps
on. You can
do it. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe on a Sabres Thursday and a Bengals-Ravens Thursday. But anyway, here you go. So your trivia is this. It's going to be based off Josh Allen.
Okay.
Rushing yards for quarterbacks in their first 4 starts. This is a trivia, and then it gets to a larger point. Josh Allen in his first 4 starts had 109 rushing yards.
Okay.
There are 7 quarterbacks that had more rushing yards than Josh Allen in their first 4 starts.
Ever?
Ever. 7 ever.
Okay. Michael Vick.
No.
Jaden Daniels.
You know what? I shouldn't say. Never mind. These are all active.
Active. Okay. Jaden Daniels.
All active. Jaden Daniels, 218.
Okay. Lamar Jackson.
332.
Kyler Murray.
113. 4 more than Allen.
Ooh, that was close, though. Okay, how about Jalen Hurts?
272, yes.
Okay. One more?
You have 1, 2, 3 more.
3 more. Daniel Jones.
No.
Okay. Drake May.
Correct.
Is he 4 starts? Has it been 4 starts?
It's been 4 starts.
Okay.
Drake May has 197.
Okay.
He's averaging 9.9 yards a carry.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, Ben Volden had that stat yesterday. Like, this is what he's doing this year.
And
we should get into a conversation about how Allen really is running a lot less.
Yes. I heard his rushing pace yesterday, and it was so much lower than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson?
No.
Fields?
Fields just behind him.
Okay.
I'll just give it to you.
Mariota?
No. All active. Although he is
active starters?
Yep. The answer is Anthony Richardson and Bo Nix.
Right, okay, right. Bo Nix. Yeah.
And it kind of gets to a point, maybe we'll get to this next hour, about Allen running the ball. Like, running the football as a young quarterback is a really good way to keep the job you struggle. And, you know, all the Anthony Richardson comparisons to Allen, like, you had the numbers on his first 10 starts, mm-hmm. and if I'm a Denver fan, I'm looking at Bo Nix as staying alive and has a team over 500, and maybe he'll figure it out, but he's good with his legs.
Yep.
And Jaden Daniels offers that. He doesn't have a ton of touchdown passes. Like, running the ball as a young quarterback is definitely a way to stay alive, And then by the time you reach where Allen and Lamar are, and maybe this is true of Hurts and Jaden Daniels as well, like, okay, let's do that only when we need to because you're able to pass the ball. So I found it interesting. There are seven active guys with more yards rushing than Allen in their first four starts versus his first four. So there you go. Trivia. Bo Nix.
That's more names than I would have guessed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a testament to the position becoming so much more athletic.
Yep.
And if you can't move, you can't play.
Right.
Right? Who
early,
plays right
early
now?
On, especially. Like, yeah. Right, like, I like the point about how it kind of allows you time to figure out the passing.
Yeah.
Figure out understanding defenses, because if you read a play wrong, but you're able to bounce out of the pocket and gain 7 yards, then not everybody's going to be mad at you, even though you maybe messed up on a passing read or something.
Yeah, you get a new set of downs.
Another go at it.
It's like a free guy, like in a video game. Like, oh, you get another chance. Yeah. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Sal joining us at 8 o'clock, recapping the Keon Coleman news about his injury. Tyler Bass, special teams player of the week this week. Good for him after hitting the game-winning kick. So, some good, some bad news. Tracking towards Bills-Colts Sunday from Indy. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.